Good morning, early birds. You caught the worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio and our friends in the public media spectrum across the Yellowstone region, bringing you the latest news of the day. I'm Carl Lengel, your host. It is the 17th of July, 2026, a Friday. Grizzly bear capture research is about to begin on private land in the Madison Range in southwest Montana. As YPR's Kay Erickson reports, the public needs to avoid the area.
A news release from the U.S. Geological Survey announced the capture operation will begin next week in an area south of Highway 84, west of Highway 191, and north of Highway 287 in the Madison Range. It's part of ongoing efforts required under the Endangered Species Act to monitor the grizzly population in the greater Yellowstone ecosystem. In order to attract bears, biologists with the Interagency Grizzly Bear Study Team will use natural attractants like recent roadkill deer and elk to draw bears to the site. If bears are in the area, culvert traps or foot snares will be used to capture bears. All areas where capture work is being conducted will have major access points marked with bright warning signs. Biologists emphasize it's critical for the public to heed the signs. The work is to begin Monday, July 20th, and continue for a month through August 28th. In Billings, I'm Kay Erickson.
A judge is telling the state of Montana to pay more than $1 million to lawyers who fought a law banning gender-affirming medical care for transgender youth. Earlier this month, the Missoula County District Court granted attorneys' request for 3 years of legal fees, or over $1.3 million. Lawmakers in 2023 passed a law to prohibit doctors from providing gender-affirming surgery and hormonal therapy to minors with gender dysphoria. Plaintiffs, including youth and medical providers, sued shortly after, and the courts prevented enforcement while legal challenges continued. In 2025, a district court determined the law violates Montanans' constitutional rights, including the right to medical privacy, and they overturned that law. In his decision to grant plaintiffs' attorney fees, a district court judge says they vindicated the important public policy of safeguarding Montanans' rights to privacy, freedom of speech and expression, and equal protection under the Montana Constitution. Plaintiffs' representatives included attorneys with the ACLU of Montana who say they expect the state to appeal. Gas prices have been quickly climbing across Montana as the United States has increased military strikes on Iran. AAA reports the statewide average price for a gallon of regular unleaded is up by about 11 cents over the last week, reaching the $4 mark Thursday. Averages in Billings, Missoula, and Great Falls have seen similar increases, with each around $4. Still, those prices are significantly lower than they were at this time a month ago, when averages were well above the $4 per gallon mark. Lawmakers on the Blockchain Committee discussed a draft bill that would regulate the use of artificial intelligence and automated systems in government. Wyoming Public Radio's Jordan Uplinger reports.
The bill would allow government entities to use artificial intelligence products, large language models, and similar systems, but it would restrict those systems from making consequential decisions. Senator Chris Roffus, a Laramie Democrat, says the bill was meant to prevent problems observed in other states, like wrongful denial of benefits.
So one of the best practices that's generally recognized in artificial intelligence at this point in time is just make sure that if it's doing something of consequence, that a human actually had legitimately their eyes on it, so that you've got the human in the chain of command loop where they're responsible for it.
Senator Tara Nethercott, a Cheyenne Republican, pushed back. She says the bill draft would create unnecessary and complex regulation.
I mean, the government can't say I'm not responsible because I used an Excel spreadsheet or because I used this software. The government will be responsible no matter what.
The two senators went back and forth before the committee opted to continue to work on the bill over the interim. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Jordan Uplinger.
The Northern Arapaho Business Council is telling leaders from a local church to leave the Wind River Reservation. That's after a controversial sermon earlier this month that encouraged Northern Arapaho tribal members to denounce their traditional ways. Wyoming Public Radio's Melody Edwards reports.
Foundations for Nations pastor Sarah Lucas gave the sermon on the last day of the tribe's traditional ceremony known as Sundance and implied the practice was a, quote, demonic activity. The Riverton Ranger reported she called on parishioners to, quote, tear down the idols. Outcry over the sermon spread across social media and in protests outside of the church. The Lucas family says they have since received death threats. The Northern Arapaho Business Council has officially asked the church to leave. Northern Arapaho member Andy LeBeau served in the Wyoming House. She felt shock and anger when she saw the video.
My ancestors had a relationship with the Creator before Wyoming was Wyoming. That relationship carried us through famine, war, removal, boarding schools, and every attempt to erase us. We do not ask Christians to abandon their faith. We ask for the same respect in return.
LeBeau says if the church decides to fight the eviction, the tribe has a long history of standing up for itself in court. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Melody Edwards.
Montanans who get their health insurance through the state's health insurance marketplace may see another significant premium spike in 2027. Laura Hatch with Big Sky Connection has details.
Montana hasn't released its rates yet, but analysts say the 16 states that have are showing 10 to 20% premium increases on average for next year. Louise Norris with healthinsurance.org says that's because of higher health care and drug costs, along with continued enrollment drops after federal subsidies for the Affordable Care Act expired at the end of 2025.
That is continuing to suppress enrollment, basically. The healthiest people have been dropping their coverage, leaving a thicker risk pool.
Norris says that drives up prices for people who continue their coverage. She notes the double-digit increases will mostly affect people above 400% of the poverty rate and don't qualify for subsidies, which is about 13% of enrollees. That's a household income of just under $64,000 for singles or $132,480 for a family of four. She adds many people who continue their coverage in 2026 switch to lower-tier plans with lower premiums, but higher out-of-pocket costs. I'm Laura Hatch, reporting.
Wyoming Game and Fish is mimicking beavers to improve water quality and habitat along the North Platte River. Wyoming Public Radio's Teal Davis has more.
Beaver dam analogs aren't new in Wyoming. Documents show similar human-made projects in the state aimed at emulating beaver dams date back as far as the 1940s. Wyoming Game and Fish aquatic habitat biologist John McCoy says the agency built and maintained 130 of these sites along the North Platte River this season.
Looking at it as simple as you can, we'll try and put them where we find beavers naturally.
The dams slow down rivers, delaying erosion and encouraging plants to grow along the bank. And while maintenance is often needed, McCoy says that in some cases, the professionals will take over upkeep of these sites.
We've actually seen that on a few projects where it's been on our docket to go in and fix them. And then we get in there and lo and behold, the beavers have already either patched up our structures or built a dam just upstream of it.
Game and Fish has built 200 beaver dam analogs in the Casper region. McCoy says the animals have moved in to about 30. He's hopeful the trend continues. For Wyoming Public Radio and Report for America, I'm Teal Davis.
Athletes in some three dozen sports, from axe throwing to golf, from pickleball to track and field, will be in Billings this weekend for the 41st Big Sky State Games, an Olympic-style sports festival. Activities kick off Friday night with the annual Soaked Run, a non-timed mile-and-a-half race that includes water features, a foam machine, and slide. The game's opening ceremonies begin at 7 p.m. with the parade of athletes, the Montana Mile, and the men's and women's 100-meter sprint, and the traditional torch lighting. This year's torch lighter is U.S. Winter Olympian and Helena native Connor Ralph, who is a former Big Sky State Games athlete. The competition in the 30-plus sports runs through Sunday around the Billings area. The Sheep Creek Mine in Ravalli County is on the federal list of fast-tracked projects. That means less red tape. Montana Public Radio's Victoria Traxler reports as one company looks to find rare earth minerals, locals remain opposed, citing concerns over the destruction of their watershed.
Flying over the Bitterroot Mountains, water carves a path from the cragged peaks and alpine lakes through canyons and drainages into the valley, Alex Ocanias with nonprofit Bitterroot Water Partnership gazes down from a six-seater EcoFlight, assessing things below.
As we're flying, you can see the difference in color. It's a perfect time to see how important water is to this valley, a green versus a brown field.
On this June afternoon, steep rock faces and tall pine forests give way to rolling hills and green farmland. At the heart of the valley lies the Bitterroot River. Ocanias says this water supplies the lifeblood of the region. And according to her, environmental groups and locals, it's under threat.
See those soft gashes on that blank space of the hill? Those are the historical mining roads.
The small plain loops over 7,000 acres of mining claims owned by one company. These claims span an area about 11 times the size of New York's Central Park. They also lie at the headwaters of the Bitterroot. U.S. Critical Materials' Sheep Creek mining proposal seeks to locate deposits of rare earth minerals here. If those minerals are found, local stakeholders like Ocanias fear for the future of their watershed.
So you can imagine what it would mean to have a mine developed in that very beginning of the headwaters.
The plain follows the path of the Sheep Creek and West Fork tributaries. These flow down to Painted Rocks Reservoir and State Park before reaching the Bitterroot River.
We did a water quality test a couple weeks ago, and about the cleanest water you can imagine.
In December 2025, the government placed the Sheep Creek project on its Fast 41 list, a classification that means it could receive faster permitting. Lisa Ronald with water conservation group American Rivers says the downside is
it cuts out public input. At certain stages, it doesn't provide the time necessary for full environmental review, which for a project of this caliber with this level of potential impact is really critical.
Ravalli County commissioners drafted a letter that same month urging the federal government to remove it from that list, citing concerns over the company's lack of transparency, the proposed mine scale, timeline, and potential impacts. The Bitterroot River and its tributaries support a $68 million fishing economy, $80 million tourism industry, and irrigation for 1,400 farms and ranches. This water also provides hundreds of miles of high-quality habitat for aquatic species like trout. Head of Montana Trout Unlimited, David Brooks.
This West Slope cutthroat and bull trout fishery up there is unique and of absolute highest value in western Montana.
U.S. Critical Materials says impacts to the watershed from exploration and mining would be mitigated. But environmental advocates say Montana's track record of predicting environmental fallout from mines is poor. One 2018 study found water quality impacts in 12 major Montana mines were only accurately predicted 9% of the time. Congressional delegates Ryan Zinke and Tim Sheehy each made statements supporting the county's request. Following a February roundtable of mining executives with Interior head Doug Burgum, Zinke shared his thoughts on the project.
So, and I'm not for it, I'm against it. I am, there's enough information that I see, enough gaps, where to fast track it is not appropriate at this time.
But Bitterroot Water Partner says little has changed since.
All I can say is that the project still remains on the fast track list and it has not been taken off, nor has the mining company contacted our commissioners, community leaders, anyone to have a further conversation about how we move forward respectfully.
In June, U.S. Critical Materials released a scaled back version of its exploration plan. The U.S. Forest Service says it's now working to gather more information before moving to an environmental analysis phase. Ocanias says poor handling of community engagement and rigorous planning in this phase has, quote, only deepened the disagreement and worry. Reporting from Stevensville, I'm Victoria Traxler.
Yellowstone Valley Farmers Market opens this Saturday in Billings. In June, I visited one of the 80-plus vendors at the market as the owners prepared for the season. Our first stop at Stone Soup Garden in Laurel was the processing shed where co-owners Claire Overholt and Patrick Certain were wrapping up for the day.
That agitates the water, helps clean the greens, and then we've got a couple different rinse stations for other vegetables, a sprayer set up outside for the roots on a table, and then this is an old washing machine that is our dryer, our spinner. So you'll just take the greens in those orange buckets, pop them in, turn this on, and it's like a giant salad spinner that shakes some of the initial water off. And then here's another fun sound for you. We've got drying stations with these fans here. So that's the last step. We just kind of let everything start to dry out before we turn around and bag it up over here.
Stone Soup Garden is a small-scale vegetable and flower farm, initially dreamed up by Certain, who grew up gardening and went on to obtain a degree in sustainable food and bioenergy systems from Montana State University.
Ran just like a farm, had farmers markets, everything, grew stuff from seed, and I just immediately thought, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. And that was about 15 years ago, I think, when I was in that class, and it took the better part of 10 years to find a landowner and the means to get things started. And it's just what I've wanted to do ever since I took that first class, I think.
Claire, how about you?
Well, I studied environmental studies in college, which I knew I wanted to pursue from early high school, and sort of throughout college and my work after was kind of finding where in the environmental scene I feel like I fit. And so I did some time in natural resources work, in environmental education. And then Patrick and I met and started dating, I'd say, 6 or so years ago. And it's sort of impossible to date a farmer and not get pulled in. But happily so for me, that this type of work is right in line with what I want to spend my life doing. And my background is more fundraising and events, really, for nonprofits. So I like to say Patrick's the field side of the farm and I'm the computer side. So I take care of our marketing and our emails and things that farmers often don't have time to do because they're busy keeping everything growing. So it's a happy marriage, I'd
say. Nor do I have the skill set or interest or any of it. So I'm super grateful to have her in it.
And as for the name Stone Soup...
Farm's name, Stone Soup Garden, comes from a parable, I think, broadly around Eastern Europe, of a group of travelers that comes to a village, sets up a cauldron with a stone in it. The villagers come around and say, what are you making? And the travelers say, we're making stone soup. We just need potatoes. One villager says, I've got potatoes. We just need carrots. Another person goes to grab carrots. And, you know, together, the village is fed by everyone contributing something. So that's a really huge part of the ethos behind the farm. Patrick continually says, this isn't my farm. it's bigger than that. And the same has shown true for our wedding, that all of our talented friends are pitching in to be DJs or the florist or the catering. And so many people are giving generously. And it's a really, extra special part of the farm and the day, that group effort.
And if you were listening closely, you heard Claire mention a wedding. The co-owners, with a little help from their family and friends, celebrated their wedding 10 days after we taped this interview at Stone Soup Garden. That's The Worm for this Friday. Catch up with us tomorrow. We'll have that weekend edition available for you then.
The Worm is a production of Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Metal art call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.